It is great to be here with you. This is designed especially for you, but as Melissa mentioned, we're doing something fairly similar for other professional organizations as well as lay leaders. And we've introduced ourselves, so I will just say a word about our office. The Office of Church Staff Finances has this mission. Guided by the values of our faith, we equip congregations for excellence as employers and their staff for financial competence and well-being. So that is a grounding for all of our work. This logo was designed by Gloria Goulair, our retirement plan director, and she says hello. As you may know, the retirement plan team is pretty busy these days with the transition from TIAA to Empower, but this logo shows the four facets of our office. Insurance there at the top in pink, and then going around retirement, aid funds, and compensation and staffing on the left. So here we go. We're going to move pretty quickly and leave as much as time as reasonable for your individual questions. I'm going to give an overview of the new congregational salary program, a little bit about how we got here, give you a general introduction to the main webpage, and then Sean will go through a little bit more about the process and how we work through things with congregational leaders. We want to say a little bit about roles and then open things up for questions and conversation. So, overview. Why do we provide salary recommendations? And in fact, the UUA didn't always do that. We want to promote economic justice, equip congregations for excellence as employers, as we talk about in our mission, help congregations attract and retain quality staff, aid congregational decision making, and because we're an association of congregations, we want to create consistent expectations across our congregations. And this work would be very hard for every congregation to do for themselves. So we're glad to work on that for you. Not only because it's been 27 years since the initial salary program got launched, but because there were some specific challenges of it, it was more than time to take another look. Some of those challenges involved practicality. Congregational life is not as neatly defined as it may have been at one time. There are a variety of equity concerns. In particular, I was concerned that we were embedding many cultural wage biases into our recommendations. Integrity, when I say illusion of precision, I'm referring to the fact that we kept getting more fine-tuned and specific by adding job titles, adding geo indices, and so on. But we were not convinced that that level of specificity was necessarily leading to better outcomes, more equitable outcomes. Finally, a word about economics. It would be an omission not to mention that we recognize the viability of congregations and professions is being challenged in many ways. At the same time, I want to be clear that unlike issues of practicality, equity, and integrity, we can't claim that putting together a new congregational salary program is necessarily going to help with these economic challenges. In creating a new program, we wanted to still provide useful information. We wanted to really emphasize that compensation is not just about numbers. We wanted to better accommodate a wide range of staff roles and configurations. We know that a congregational life and human resources and the world are changing quickly, and we wanted to put into place something fresh that we also think might allow for change over time, although I would be shocked if it lasted 27 years like the last program did. And we want to encourage the use of other sources of information. That's part of the integrity piece for us. We're not the only source of wisdom for you. And finally, we really feel like our role is to empower congregational decision makers. We are here to support congregational decisions. I want to say a little more about economic justice. We focused pretty heavily in this program modification on lower wage earners, the lower end of the ranges, and smaller congregations, which is most of our congregations. Our levels, we believe, help to mitigate those cultural wage biases I mentioned. We boosted the very lowest salary that you'll find anywhere in our charts. We changed the way the minimums and maximums work, okay? So some of the ranges used to be significantly wider, right? So for any given midpoint, that meant a smaller minimum, a lower minimum, and yes, also a higher maximum. So we left a little breathing room at the top of the range, but we really wanted to identify a minimum that was not too far below the midpoint, because it was really hard to get people up to midpoint when those ranges were wide. We'll introduce you to the ruler method and how that allows for faster progress to midpoint. We're taking a more customized approach for our very largest congregations, and glad to talk to you about that. Not sure if any of you are represented here today. And we do recognize that there are tensions. There are a whole bunch of trade-offs and tensions involved in this work. And one of them has to do with wage ratios when you're looking at the highest to the lowest paid person within the congregation. We really encourage people to track that ratio. We don't have a recommended ratio, but we want congregations to look at what does that mean if, say, the highest person keeps getting larger raises than the person with the lowest pay. And we recognize at the same time that the people toward the top are the people in professional positions that hope to advance and stay in UU work. This is generally true for a long time. And so making those two things work together can be tricky, as well as pay differences by size. And we really thought a lot about what was reasonable in terms of how much of a pay increase do you get for moving to a similar position in a larger congregation. This is our main webpage, just so you recognize it when you land on it. And you get to everything from that page. Here is the link to it. And we'll take you through the resources and reminders. And just a note at the very near the top of that page, we haven't gotten rid of anything. We have a historical information page with everything from the 2022-23 year, the year that we're still in. We're going to keep those resources available at least through the following year. And we actually think we might keep a lot of this kind of historical salary information there for some time to come. There are a couple of introductory resources, and we want people to review those before accessing the page that has the actual ranges on it. And so please remind the leaders that you're working with not to rush to those salary charts. After that, you'll find some key documents for using with the recommended ranges. Sean will say more. This isn't, in general, all that different from what we've been doing. The individual resources look different, but similar, you know, geo index, size, looking for the right job. Again, please remind your leaders, don't rush to the charts, spend a little time, especially with the salary process guidance, so you see what the overall approach is. Finally, when it's time to look at those recommended salary ranges, we've put them on a separate page. You need to access it by completing a little form that says that you looked at those two introductory resources. It's not meant to be an obstacle. We weren't trying to put you through, a lot of work, but we wanted to make sure that people weren't just landing on these things with no context because it's so new. A few reminders, process is primary. It's not just about finding a number on a chart. Local information is often very important. And in fact, for some of your positions, understanding the local wages might be even more important than what our recommendations can tell you. And finally, the cost of living. This is a complicated thing in these high inflationary times. So we have a kind of a note about cost of living and how you might want to take it into account while understanding that truly meeting the cost of living over the past year could be very, could be aspirational for many of you. So I'm going to turn it over to Sean.
Thanks, Jan. So we thought it might be helpful just to work through the process, kind of briefly touch on each step when a congregational leader, or frankly, even any of y'all would want to reach out to Jan or I for some help in understanding or moving through and applying this process to your particular congregation. So it's as Jan had lifted up, it's quite similar to the previous process. And again, everything is accessible from the congregational salary program page. So it's a four-step process with sort of one pre-step. And that pre-step is I think, the one of the most important, and that's reading the salary process guidance document. And this is a document that Jan and I put together that really emphasizes the necessity to talk about process and to consider your and the congregation's values. The salary process document focuses on equity, transparency, and economic justice as the three foundational values that we believe are most important in developing a just compensation program. Once folks have looked at that document, and the truth is not everybody does, but we certainly encourage them to do that, then we just work through the four steps. The first is looking at the geo index, evaluating the congregational size, using a job level rubric, and only after all that, as Jan put in her two stop signs on the slides, only after that do we then turn our attention to looking at the specific salary recommendations. So I'm going to touch just very briefly on each of these steps. The first one being looking up the geo index. This is the easiest of them all. There's been no change in the methodology. We have, of course, updated the geo index numbers for the 23-24 program year. Just like to remind folks that the geo index is a measure of cost of wages, that we provide cost of living information, but the cost of living is not specifically included either in the geo index or in the salary recommendations. We know cost of living is a significant concern for y'all and among your congregation leaders, and we can talk about that a little bit more in the Q&A as you'd like to explore that. After looking up the geo index, the next step in the process is to evaluate the congregational size. And this is an evolution in the new congregational salary program. Previously, we had six specific sizes that were hard boundaried based on membership size. We've evolved to four congregational size profiles that still start with membership. We still think that's the most important consideration. But now we've brought in additional factors for you and your leaders to consider. What does your operating budget look like? What does your staffing profile look like? When you look at these size profiles, you'll notice that, and it is intentional, that there is overlap between the profiles. Again, we want to be really clear in supporting and investing the decision-making authority in the congregations and to provide you reasonable guidance on coming to what is best for your congregation. When a congregation does reach out to us, the first place I look is at the UUA's congregational directory, which is the information that's gathered based on the annual certifications. So if you are interested, that's where we pull our data from. And we also recognize that that data evolves over time. So when we have a conversation, we want to talk to you about what is your current situation. And once we've made a reasonable decision, or at least an indication of what you think the congregational size is, the next step is we want to look at the jobs in the congregation. What does the structure look like? This is another place where we've had some significant evolution. Previously, we had 26 specific job titles. And for the reasons that Jan has discussed, that didn't serve an awful lot of folks in a number of congregations. So we've evolved to 6 job levels. And these levels are based on the characteristics of what the job is requiring. So qualifications, authority and accountability, visibility and impact, and the responsibilities. These levels are adaptable to the characteristics of the job. And it may even be that the appropriate level for a job can be a blend of a couple of these things. We really encourage folks to be transparent about their considerations. You'll notice in the top 3 job levels, the minister, executive 1, 2, and the director, there are 2 pay tiers, which we're going to talk about in just a moment. Sorry, had a little bit of a brain lock there for a moment. What's important that I want to emphasize at this point before we look at the salaries is all of the discussion, all of the discernment up to this point has been structural. It's about what does the congregation look like and what do the jobs look like. We've been intentional that we are not yet looking at the individuals until we get to the salary program. And we think for all of the ethical reasons that Jan talked about before, mitigating wage bias and those against disfavored persons, that this is a system that we want to look at what is the structure, and then we can begin to apply to what are the individuals. So this brings us now to looking at the salary recommendations. Jan had lifted up that there is the separate access to this. And here on the salary recommendations, you will notice again, we have the 2 pay tiers that we have. Jan, do you want to talk a little bit more about the 2 pay tiers at this point?
Yeah, this was a really interesting thing to reflect on. And where we came out is, and I will tell you, probably if you had asked me 5 years ago, I would have said, hey, you have a minister and a non-minister functioning at the same level or doing the same job. They should just get paid the same. And my thinking evolved on that in concert with a number of different conversations, people who had really wise things to say. And where we came out was that we recognize that ministers are in a different situation within our UU universe, right? So there's a lot more of a very specific process for a minister to leave a congregation or to enter a congregation. There's more of a timetable for it. A minister is less likely to be able to just leave their job at any old time and go pick up a comparable position in town, right? But that's much more true of ministers than other staff. Ministers also have other restrictions. If you've been, for instance, an intern in a congregation, you can't serve that congregation as a called minister for some period of time. So there are a number of ways that we make life a little more complicated for the minister and also for the congregation itself in terms of what they need to go through to finish up with the minister or to start with the new minister. So with all of that in mind, we thought it made sense to give a little bit of a pay advantage to ministers serving in a job that is sometimes held by a minister, but also could be held by somebody who is not a minister. What I can tell you about this is that it actually reduces the gaps. When we looked at our old way of recommending salaries, we saw some very large gaps between the recommended pay for a minister and a non-minister who technically might be doing very similar work. So this, although we're still recognizing ministers a little bit in the system, it is actually less than the gaps in our old program. I hope that's helpful.
Thanks, Jan. And we can certainly return more to that in the Q&A session as well, because this may can certainly be an important part of the program, particularly for ministers. So when you have landed now at the salary recommendations, we need to evaluate where an individual is to be placed within these recommendations. And we did develop a tool to help you with that. It's called the ruler method, which we're going to look at here in just a moment. What I'm about to emphasize at this point is that it may be appropriate to blend the salary recommendations. Remember that this is prescriptive, this is not prescriptive for you. This is to support your decision-making process. So you may find it's appropriate to blend a salary across a size or across job levels. In all of this, we hope to lift up your process and your values and to promote a system that's in line with what is important to you and to the lay leaders in your congregation. So let's talk a little bit about the ruler method. Just very briefly, the ruler method takes the whole range of the salary recommendations and divides it into a ruler. So the midpoint is at 5 inches, the expected minimum is at 0, the max is at 10, and those last 2 inches from 10 to 12 are reserved for special situations. We're very confident that we've got good advice to apply the ruler method, both for new hires and also for ongoing annual salary adjustments. Jan's going to talk in just a moment about professional milestones and credentialing. Again, as I lifted up, this is an instructive system. This is not prescriptive, but we believe very strongly that this is a vital tool for promoting economic justice in our congregations. So let's talk a little bit about applying the ruler method. As I noted, this can be both for new hires and annual adjustments. What we recommend is that the 0 mark on the ruler, the expected minimum, is really reserved just for those folks that meet the minimum qualifications or expectations. That the midpoint is the recommended salary for any individual that's coming into a position fully proficient for that work. As we've talked about before, we encourage congregations to strive for a consistent philosophy in applying this. For annual adjustments, as Jan lifted up earlier, we do emphasize the priority on bringing those lower paid individuals to the midpoint as quickly as possible. So we recommend a larger annual increase for those folks that are below the midpoint and a little bit more modest as folks reach the midpoint and continue on through their career. Again, we're going to talk about professional milestones in just a moment. And just to repeat, we think a consistent philosophy is extremely important when applying this program. Jan and I had some interesting conversations about these two colored boxes with challenges. We think these are challenges and opportunities and things for you to consider as you're evaluating an individual. And what I particularly want to lift up are those things that are unconventional paths and the value of lived experience. We often find it easy to assign a value to degrees or other credentials. There are a great many folks serving our congregations who came through non-traditional paths. We want to encourage folks to develop a consideration of being able to adequately recognize and lift up the additional skills and value that those individuals bring. It is absolutely a challenge, as Jan noted in earlier comments about the economic realities, that there are some tensions that have to be considered. Those are the tensions between internal and external equity and the wage ranges and sometimes even wage compression. We can talk about all of those as those concerns come up as well. And there's more about all that in that salary process guidance document. So professional milestones are something that's important to think about and deserve some discernment as you consider this, applying this to your congregation. And Jan, can I invite you to talk a little bit about professional milestones?
Sure. Thanks, Sean. Well, in general, we're leaving the specifics up to congregational leaders, especially when you think about not just professional milestones like degrees, but maybe some of those unconventional path type of milestones, or even the general experience that people bring with them when they start their job. It's really hard for us to try to get into specific types of degrees are worth a certain amount of value, for instance. It's a challenge to establish the relative relevance and value of specific educational and other kinds of opportunities. So we're letting congregations figure that out. Again, the piece about consistency. We do say to staff, and you are included in that, not to make assumptions of that you're going to get a raise when you complete your whatever it is, say a degree. Please talk early with your supervisor, whoever that is. We've made an exception for the UUA's own in-house programs, by which I'm referring to RE credentialing and music leadership certification. Again, we don't want staff to make assumptions, but at the same time, we have embedded specific expectations about what completion of those programs looks like using our ruler method. You might recall that in our old program, there were actually separate rows on the salary chart for those credentialing and certification programs. And now we've felt that it's more appropriate to talk about moving somebody. Someone's not changing jobs. They're moving within the work that they're doing. They're getting a little bit of an extra boost to their pay for completion of those programs. It doesn't mean nobody else gets any. It means we're leaving it up to congregational leaders how to take those other kinds of milestones into account. As we transition to the new program, again, focus on process and values. Recognize when aspirations exceed resources, and we talk about this a bit in the salary process guidance, and this might mean setting priorities. You might decide that the most important thing is to bring your lowest paid staff up to the living wage in your community. You might decide that the most equitable thing to do in the short term is to provide a reasonable cost of living adjustment across the board to all of your staff. You might even decide there's a specific pay discrepancy that you know has been there, and perhaps this new way of framing things with the job levels is making it all the more apparent, and you're going to look to remedy a very specific discrepancy. In all that you do, we remind you, nobody's pay should get lowered. Okay, this is a one-time shift to a pretty new thing. And we know that depending on your size and the way you've been handling people's job titles, it could be this shift to job levels makes it look like suddenly somebody is significantly overpaid. That doesn't mean that you lower their pay. I know we heard from someone today who's saying that they have one person who's well ahead of the curve and other people are just reaching it relative to where they think they should be. So they're going to give somebody a one-time bonus, for instance. There are a lot of ways of handling this and we can talk more about it. But the idea is you're not going to take away anyone's salary. Let's talk about roles. First, our role. Here we are, again, equipping congregations for excellence as employers. We take a whole staff approach, so we struggle with congregations, and we know how it happens, right? When someone gets a new minister, there's a whole ministerial agreement. You're working with the transitions office and with us, and everything's spelled out about benefits, and there's a fair amount of competition, right? So that's very different from most of your other hires, but we want to see people treated pretty much the same way across the staff team. So whatever you decide, for instance, makes sense for the ministerial compensation, we hope that you apply that in a reasonable parallel way for everyone. We're advocates for equity, transparency, and economic justice. We're here to provide a service to congregations. We're doing that by providing guidance on process and also, yes, specific recommended salary ranges that come out of national wage data that's been smushed around to coincide with our job levels and our size recommendations. We're here to be cheerleaders for congregational leaders, and that certainly includes ministers when they are part of the decision-making process. We're not here to point fingers at people. We are here to be supporters of your efforts. The role of congregational leaders, we want to be clear that the congregation retains agency. The congregation owns its decisions and policies and practices. I tell people that, you know, I work at the UUA, and that means people are either telling us, don't tell us what to do, or please tell us what to do. And so we're always juggling that. So we're trying to be clear that in the end, this is up to congregations. Making process primary, using information responsibly and sensibly. And again, we're here to help leaders do that. And I always like to remind everyone, including you, take good care of your staff. And we hope your congregation is taking good care of you as an employee in other ways. It's not just about what people are getting paid. The role of ministers. Please do learn about our UUA resources and guidance. Reach out to us with questions and advocate for equitable and transparent pay practices. If you are a head of staff or a supervisor, it's important for you to recognize and your power and your responsibility and to make sure that you're there to support and advocate for your staff. Please do examine your pay practices through the lens of values and communicate honestly and compassionately with your whole team. We wanted to put in something about what we hear from some non-clergy staff, a variety of frustrations. I'm going to go ahead and read them just so you can take them in. Frustrations about pay include disempowerment, decision-making not being transparent, misuse of UUA recommendations, people's experience not being accounted for, supervisor not advocating, people don't trust the leadership, a variety of other compensation issues involving benefits or time off. We're hearing more and more about households under financial strain, and I know that applies to some of you as well. And that there's a lack of career path options. People don't always have a lot of choices. And the realities are, and this is really hard to talk about, we got to talk about this stuff. Costs are increasing often in the same breath as, you know, the budget is stagnant. There's a reversal of the trend toward hiring more staff and giving staff more hours. We anticipate some further decline in congregational membership and staffing. And there's also opportunity in there, and we can talk about that. And professional growth isn't going to translate into promotions or viable career paths for all. So you might have a fantastic administrator or religious educator, and they have done, you know, they've gotten involved in their professional organization and they're excited about all kinds of continuing education and they're doing a great job. They might feel like they're ready for the next bigger thing, and it might not be there in your congregation or another. So these are opportunities to minister, right? You want to be building trust, supporting your team, and managing anxiety, and I always say, including your own, we all have it. So thank you, and thanks to people who sent their pictures. That's kind of fun to put in here. So now we have time for questions and thoughts and joys and sorrows. So I'm going to stop sharing, and let's see what we have.
So there's already a question in the chat, Jan. The question is, connected with this, can you speak about how the new salary guidelines address merit and longevity. And before you two respond to that, I just want to say that it will be helpful if you either use the raise hand icon so that we can call on you in an orderly fashion, or message me if that's preferable.
That's great. Sean, do you want to take this from the standpoint of the ruler method, at least in part?
Yeah. So let me preface this right away by saying there is no magic formula. We're working with a lay leader that was in discussions with an individual who had 20 years of experience and wanted a number to give to account for that. And it just doesn't work that way, right? At the same time, those individuals who have more experience can certainly bring more value to the congregation. And so that degree of experience, we think, should be recognized. This, I think, connects back to supporting a congregation to have a system that they can apply, they can make some decisions equitably across positions. So they may consider that anyone who demonstrates 5 years of experience should be immediately considered at the midpoint and 10 years higher. Don't have a specific prescription, but we want to help a congregation develop and come to an answer that they can provide with integrity to all of their staff and apply that equitably to all individuals in their congregational system.
We found that sort of performance-based extra pay has typically not been too much of a thing in our congregations. That's sort of a, you know, broad systemic norm. A congregation can make its own decision about that. We do, this is part of that kind of exceptional service piece that we do talk about in our salary program guidance, that you might decide that, you know, that there are certain times where someone's gone above and beyond or just needs, and you're welcome to decide what that means. But the ruler method is mainly a years of experience based, you know, you hire them in at zero and inches if they're coming in with no experience, and maybe 2 inches if they're, you know, they've had a couple years experience somewhere else that you think would be highly relevant. Again, we can't make all those judgment calls. Once again, we encourage faster progress to midpoint. So we say, you know, 1 inch a year up through the midpoint, assuming they're performing reasonably well, and then 0.5 inch for each year beyond the midpoint. But this is something that a congregation could play with and adapt.
I would add on just a little bit, just from the experience of the congregations I've worked with. One of the things that I often will advise is to be careful and transparent about how a congregation chooses to apply merit-based increases. That can, if you're not careful, become a tool of inequity. You can decide this person we love more than others, so they're just going to get a merit increase. And we know that that is a road that leads to some folks being devalued, being valued less, not treated with economic justice, not treated with integrity. So there's nothing inherently wrong with providing a merit increase, but want to really encourage congregations to think, if that's part of their system, how they're going to apply that fairly and equitably to everyone that's supporting the congregation as an employee.
Thanks for that, Sean. That's a great point. You know, the people in the perhaps the higher level, more visible positions might be better positioned to look more amazing, right? When somebody else could also be doing really incredible, you know, behind the scenes or basic operational work that doesn't lend itself quite as easily to someone noticing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I see Reverend Julie's hand up.
Thanks. I had to take a phone call, so I hope I'm not asking a question out of turn. We're in question and answer time, are we? Yes. Okay, good. And I'm following up a bit on those last comments, is that my former congregation went through a kind of a justice process of putting together a salary, a compensation policy that that disassociated merit with salary increases. And to say that evaluations are still important and recognizing people is still important, but that's not tied to a salary increase, that the salary increase is a whole separate thing, and that there's other ways to incentivize or disincentivize based on evaluations. I'm probably not speaking that very well, but I just wondered how much you've thought about that kind of process within this new salary compensation. I hear you saying merit increases aren't necessarily helpful, but how does the evaluation process fit in?
Yeah, we didn't talk about it a lot explicitly, I don't think, in our I'm trying to remember if we did or didn't in our process guidance, but we do have a performance evaluations page that is really clear about that. Sean, maybe you can pull up a link to that. And it's basically, I mean, you have to decide. Again, most of our congregation, I think, kind of shy away from trying to make, you know, your exceptional versus very good, right? And then building out, you know, I've worked in corporate and so's my husband, and 1 through 5 scales, and that determines your raise. And our congregations generally haven't been doing that. And I think that's probably, you know, for the reasons we're saying, appropriate, but we have a whole thing on kind of really getting clear about the purpose of performance evaluations, exactly what you're saying. I mean, they're important for so many reasons, and yet that doesn't necessarily mean it. I mean, it could be a baseline. If someone's clearly not doing their job, that might be something to consider, right? But yeah, I think in general, it's just as well to be clear about the purpose of that process as a separate process.
That's what I wanted.
What else? Have any of you, feel free to ask what you want. I'm wondering if anyone is part of a congregation that's already kind of looking at how to move forward with this. I know we've talked to a number of congregations, and often it's the minister and a couple of other leaders. Sometimes 3 or 4 people will get together and each separately decide what job level they think each of the staff are at. And then they compare notes, and they might decide there's, you know, everyone's on the same page about which one the minister is or which one somebody else is, but then there's some disagreement about somebody else, and they can kind of talk about that. What does that mean? Is the person really truly in between levels, or does one level fit them better than another? Where do they fit relative to this other person who's in a role in a different part of the congregation? I see Connie's hand up. Hi, Connie.
Hey, Jan, how are you?
I'm pretty well.
So I'm in the first year of an interim in a congregation where they've never done any kind of performance evaluations or even given feedback to the employees. And they looked at the old guidelines, but not really for everybody. And there's not even a hiring practice in place. So I still haven't figured out how they put people on a particular path. So I want to, for this budget year, we kind of looked at the existing guidelines just to see where people are. I've identified who's really off, who's, you know, not. I don't think we have time to implement these full guidelines for this budget year because the draft budget is almost done. My question is, do you have any suggestions for the best way to introduce this to the board, the congregation, the staff, so that maybe this is something we could implement for next year so that the settled minister who comes in isn't shocked?
That's a great idea. Wow, what great developmental work that you get to do there, Connie. I'm thinking, you know, I mentioned priorities. And so it sounds like maybe you've discovered one or two people that really feel off, you know, especially off at the low end, because we talked about nobody's salary is going to go down. So, you know, maybe you decide, you know, we want to give everybody something, but let's see if we can build it a little bit extra for people that somehow have just really feel behind. So that could be one approach. And we'd be really glad to work with you and or a couple of your leaders on applying this to your situation. It sounds like, you know, you have a whole bunch of things to think about there.
I would really welcome the help, because it's for this year, what we've decided to do is give everyone a cost of living increase across the board. But for the next year, I really don't know. And there are some issues with specific positions, not working enough hours. And, you know, we need more. Do you add a second person? Like, how do you do this? So I will be in touch.
Please do. Yeah, that's why we're here. That's great.
Something we've lifted up in some of the presentations is that the previous set of salary recommendations been around for 25 years. So we have no expectation that every congregation is just suddenly going to shift in the space of a couple of months to this brand new system. So we also just encourage folks to take the steps that feel reasonable to you. Give yourselves and your leaders a lot of grace, which y'all are all very good at, and then reach out to us for help too, where we can support you.
Great. How about, I see a question in the chat from Lisa. Let's go to that one. And then Julie, if you don't mind, I'm going to go to Jenny and Lisa, and then we'll come back to you. I had seen the CPI index number as 6.5%. We've been looking at that as inflation. I see this 8.3. Yeah. So we use, because we do all our work at the fall, and we do that for a variety of reasons. That's when a lot of the annual salary survey information comes in. And that's when Social Security puts out their next year's COLA. So 8.3% it's not the same as the Social Security COLA, but it's a very similar version of the CPI. It's just a slightly different version of the CPI, Lisa. So we use that at the third quarter year over year average of a certain version of the Consumer Price Index to come up with our number for the following program year. So it could be that 6.5% is what it's probably, Sean probably follows this better than I do. If we did it right now, it would be less than 8.3%, because I know it's been trending down a little bit, right?
Yeah. Jan is very gentle about lifting up my numbers geekiness, but yeah, to not be too technical, the CPI basically measures, it's a rolling 12 months. So when we measured it, it was at the end of the third quarter, and it was against the previous 12 months, which was 8.3%. The new CPI figures came out a couple of weeks ago for measuring the end of January to the end of January last year, and it was down to 6.5%. So that's why it differs, because the period, it's an always rolling 12-month average.
So we're always running, in that respect, we're running a little behind, right? Because we're looking at numbers that are pulled from July, August, and September of the previous year, and we're reporting. So over time, it all evens out, but we are running a little bit behind. So your congregation, depending on your budget planning schedule, if you wanted to look at an inflation figure, You could choose to use a calendar year one or January to January, whatever you like. Great. Jenny.
Hi, thanks. I didn't realize I had unmuted myself. I hope I wasn't noisy.
No, you didn't.
Thank you for this time for us to talk. I was thinking I would just listen, but you did ask like where people might be at in congregations at looking at any of this information and thinking forward. And so I can speak to that for us here. I'm in Pocatello, Idaho. I call us a micro size. We're 39 to 40, members, and lay led history and culture that has slowly worked towards their vision of having ministry, professional ministry, and that would be me most recently. And I've been with them. I'm in my fifth year or sixth year or something like that. So it's been part-time. It's been, I've watched this little fellowship with no endowment. And yeah, I mean, it very, very earnestly trying their very best to keep ministry and to keep growing and find the relevance in the community and live into that in all the ways. I'm in love with this fellowship, right? And they have struggled financially, and we've heard that all over the place. So this year, we experimented with halftime, with me not having funds coming from any other way. And I was able to tell them at the half year mark that I don't think halftime is serving them well, and that I know myself that my heart is all in and I cannot live on a halftime when they calculate this, okay? So, I'm so sorry. I see that you're needing to wrap up. So I'll try to speed up. What we came up with.
No, that was my point, that if anyone needs to leave at the top of the hour, I just want to make sure.
Okay. Thanks. So I had an earnest talk with the board about this is the reality. We met, we pulled up the information that you've put together. Saw a lot of that. And frankly, we came up with what got nicknamed the living wage budget, the year of the living wage budget. And so they're looking to use the MIT calculator. What is a living wage for this region? And then we're negotiating from there. Can they get me there to that point? It feels risky because it's not on your charts. It is not a number that is on your charts. And I worry about responsibility to colleagues who may come after. But I think what I'm hoping and what I'm sharing is that we are doing due diligence. I feel like we're a team, me and the leadership here, to recognize all of this data, all this information, and continue on this journey that we're kind of calling an experiment with, can we live into our relevance in a very conservative region and grow into these more equitable numbers as far as income. Does that make sense? So
I love that. And, for a very small congregation, a lot of people said, well, up to 120 or 140 members, that's still an awful lot of congregations, right? And a congregation of 120 looks super different from a congregation of 40 or 80 even, right? And we decided we could not justify having any lower salaries. We felt that the job, if you're doing that job, you're probably working fewer hours, but you're still doing that job. So it would get prorated, but we didn't want to go any lower than those size A recommendations. But in a place like this that has, I don't know if they have any other employees where, it's really up to you to figure out what's fair and reasonable to you. And even if there were like an administrator or, somebody else with a handful of hours a week, it's very possible that just looking for a reasonable local wage is just the most sensible way to approach that. Yeah.
Thank you. Great. Yeah, thank you.
Sure.
I appreciate that feedback.
Sure. Yeah.
We acknowledge there are other sources of compensation to look at. We obviously we're very enthusiastic about this system, but we absolutely support you and lay leaders in finding what is the most ethical application of compensation system for you. The other thing I'll say, Jenny, is I really admire the spirit you're bringing to that congregation of experimentation and innovation and trying different things to serve the needs of that community. It's one of the things that, frankly, in our work is exciting about working with smaller congregations. Those that do have some of the most significant challenges also have some of the most significant opportunities for more creative staffing. And so for those of you that may work or have colleagues that work with very small congregations, we love to hear from you and love to work with you as well to see how we can support creative solutions in being able to serve the spiritual needs of that community.
Yeah, I'm doing a lot more with sharing staff and other approaches to thinking about how can we make this all work given those economic realities. Lisa, how are you, Lisa?
It's been Thanks. I'm also an interim, so shout out to Reverend Connie and to entering a congregational system that hasn't had any kind of staff really evaluative process. And I found years ago, still in settled ministry, something called a performance planning and review, and it might have come from the Department of UUA's compensation people. But I have found it really helpful now in three congregations to sit down and set out what your key accountabilities are, to have the staff member set goals for the coming year. And that helps me sort of be a linebacker and protect the staff if somebody comes in and puts a big pile of work on their desk. And we say, oh, you know what? That isn't in there. Main goals or key accountabilities this year. Anyway, it's a resource that I don't know where I got if I didn't get it from you, Jen.
Can you send it to me?
Trying to say is I can send you a blank and you can make it available because it's been really good.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, we'll try to see if we can track down the history.
Okay.
Thanks.
Sure.
Julie, you had your hand up earlier. Was there something else you wanted to bring forward?
Well, it was really just kind of a shout out, which I guess I should do. I didn't want to take up time if people are wanting to head off. I also met an interim, and this congregation last year before my time here made a commitment in their budget to try to stop balancing their budget on the back of their staff. And so had a 3-year plan to raise salaries. And we're in pledge drive time now because their fiscal year starts May 1st of all things. And so then the new compensation guidelines came out. And so the treasurer here and I met with Sean a couple weeks ago, maybe, or a week ago. And it was just really helpful to just kind of look at, well, how is this different? And it was higher numbers than they had in their 3-year plan, which was already a stretch. And so now they've just done some tweaking and looking at, okay, maybe we can't do it in 3 years, but maybe we can do it in 5. And so are, projecting out further and looking at that. And probably it's not really a big challenge, but one of the questions we still have is where to put people on staff levels. We have 4 kind of main staff other than me, and all of them have been here a long time. And when asked what level they were at, they all said a level higher than I or the treasurer thought they were at. And so we're kind of like, oh, what does that mean? In terms of people's idea of themselves and what their authority and accountability is, because of their longevity, they have a lot of that, right? Their job roles, right. A new person wouldn't be at that level. And so it's just an interesting dilemma.
It is. And I think that piece about, all right, just the job itself, if we started with a blank slate and this expectation, where would the person fall? That does feel really different from someone who's been in the position a long time and they've grown. And, you know, it's very possible that it just means that they should be pretty high in that lower level, but maybe it means something else. Maybe it means their job really has expanded and you should think about, you know, maybe these people really are functioning at that next higher level. And that's, you know, I'm guessing that's some of what you and Sean talked about. But yeah, we're hearing, especially manager, director, we're hearing a lot of, you know, which one is it? But I will also say, over 70, about 70% and often over 70% of a congregation's budget is typically for personnel related expenses. And that includes, you know, payroll taxes and professional development benefits and all that. And sometimes people see that number and they're just like, what? Look at all this money we're spending on our staff. But, you know, we're congregations. We're about people and relationships. And I'm really glad that you're leadership is open to doing the right thing. And we also know that many people in the congregation themselves are struggling with their own stagnant income or insecure jobs and whatnot. So it's very commendable to you and your leadership that you're looking at how to make this as best you can. And again, yeah, not necessarily all in one year. Lisa, other Lisa.
Yeah, I just wanted to add a shout out that when I began, I'm in a developmental ministry, and when I began in my first year, the board asked me to complete the benefits tune-up that the interim team had started. And just in terms of just looking, I just want to say it was a hugely helpful tool to help the congregation and board understand where they were out of alignment or inequitable in terms of the benefits they were offering their staff. And it just was a really clear tool to use both on my end for looking at where the inequities were and where we were out of compliance with things like the retirement plan. And it also was a really good framework to help share that out with the board so that they could discern their values around that. So if you haven't, it was a new resource to me, probably had been out there, I just hadn't, but I want to recommend it. And Jan was hugely helpful in helping me figure out the compliance issues around the retirement for not just current staff, but past staff. So.
Thank you. Thanks for that shout out. And yeah, some people get confused about what's like a legal rule and what's what the UUA recommends you do. And so we've tried to parse that out in our resources, but for sure, reach out if we can be helpful. And we like to make legal the priority. And in fact, when I had that slide about the challenges, we recognized that we had had this program in place so long and people were so focused on the numbers on the charts, which in the end are recommendations, that sometimes really critical legal pieces, especially on the benefit side, were simply getting overlooked.
And April will be Benefits Tune-Up Month.
Thank you.
So for those of you that subscribe to the newsletter that Jan is the editor and primary contributor for, that's the link for it. We'll put the link to the most recent version of the Benefits Tune-Up Workbook and highlight it in that newsletter. Normally, February is Benefits Tune-Up Month, but because of our colleagues on the retirement team and their heavy lift in moving us from TIAA to Empower, we all agreed we would wait and then update the Benefits Tune-Up Workbook a little later, but it is there right now if you want to take a look and download it. And we'd love to support you in working through that resource too, if you'd like.
I want to thank you all for coming today and being part of this time. And special thanks to Jan and Sean for carving out two times in their schedules to be in conversation with members of the UMA. Thank you all. And please, if you're talking to colleagues who are expressing questions or concerns about this, let them know. We'll post this recording that they'll be able to access. And of course, they're always happy. They're always welcome to reach out to the Office of Church Staff Finance for individual consultation as well. Thank you all.
Great to be with everybody.